Let's get some questions. Thank you, Fred. We have a media reporter here. You can get a microphone at the back there, or you can come and grab mine. And whoever the question is directed to will be able to go on there. And don't have Tom getting up and down too often, though. Any questions or comments? I mean, normally it's fact burns questions, but we do invite you to have a preamble or a comment or whatever, which would be great. So, do you have any rules? Any questions? Because if you don't, I'll have to. Okay, so there we are. Mary.
Well, just a comment and one question. My comment is I'm really glad that Pastor put this on, and I really wish more people were here because the amount of really useful information we got tonight is just staggering. It's wonderful, really, to learn this much, and really wanted to thank the members of the Blood Trust, the Police Commission, and Chief McKenzie for being here as well as Dominic Amnesty. Really great information, thank you. My question is for Don Wright, so she's because he doesn't know how to The question is, do you know how many, sort of in general, per year, how many tasers are sent to countries being used for torture? Does Amnesty have that information?
No.
Or sort of over a period of time or anything? Like, what is the extent of tasers or CEDs being sent to other countries
than used for torture? Well, what we do know is they're used in 44 countries because TASER itself has announced that has done that. What we don't have information on is when and where they may be actually being used as a torture device. And there are already lots of, I don't think the TASER is actually what would be used for torture that often, because they've got already electroshock weapons, the stun batons, cattle prods, a battery with a crank that they're using to torture people with electricity. So they're not having to buy new technology. They've got old technology that serves them really well. So it's unlikely that it's specifically being ordered to be used for torture. It's got too specific a purpose. The probes, I mean, you're not going to be that far away from someone you're torturing, so you don't need to shoot at them. You're going to use something that's more direct and you have more control over. So we don't have that kind of information because I don't think that's an issue. But certainly the other electroshock instruments that I showed you, though clearly those are being used in torture. We have lots of stories from former prisoners who will describe the weapons exactly, and they're usually cattle prods, batons, or batteries hooked up to wires. It doesn't have to be very sophisticated. It doesn't have to be a $700 weapon. It can be just a battery and some wires. Most of the torturers don't have much of a budget, I guess. They don't need one, yeah.
Chief McKenzie, I was interested in your sort of illustration of the fact that it takes, one act to light a Christmas tree and 50,000 or 70,000 or 100,000 volts. You walk across the floor and get a static shock. But that's not what we're looking at here, is it?
No.
So would you like to elaborate on your illustration?
Basically, that
just confused me from what I thought places were the way you illustrated.
I guess the point being there is that I think Don's probably alluded it too, there's many, many more devices. And probably why policing didn't start using conducted energy devices until 2000, that's when we first bought them online here in Alberta, in particular in Lethbridge, was because there wasn't a device that had the control and the capability that the conducted energy devices do now. That was high voltage, it was high amperage. But like 50,000 volts, is often cited in some studies, and everybody hears that, and I'm like, oh my God, that's huge, and it scares people. It's voltage doesn't kill you, amperage does, and the amperage in these energy devices is very low. It's less amperage than what it takes to light a little tiny light bulb or an LED device in some situations. Going across the floor, you can generate a lot of voltage. The point being is, don't focus on the voltage, focus on the amperage, and then actually we shouldn't focus on it at all. We should focus on the use. And one of the other lines that I have is simply, if I'm building a house and a wall falls down, I don't go over to the construction site and throw all the hammers away. I fire the carpenter. And that is probably what we have to be most aware of, and we are very, very aware of, is the accountability that goes with the use of it. And each one of our officers will make sure that he's using that instrument for what it's meant to be, taking control of a combative or assaultive situation to protect people from bodily injury or grievous bodily harm, and to prevent a fatality. And in fact, we attribute it to saving some lives. And would there have been other successful measures in saving some of those individuals? Probably yes. And it would be my hope the individual did the commercial robbery when he walked out and saw 5 or 10 policemen standing there pointing their guns at him and drop your weapon or get on the ground, he would have. And, you know, we might not have. And it's one of the things you have to be very careful, though, is that's great in Lethbridge. We have a fantastic community. Our incidents of violence are escalating. The number of robberies we're seeing attributed to the drug trade concerns us very much. But we're still not Calgary, we're still not Edmonton, not Minnipik, and those, and we're still not larger centers where those potential abuses are. So I'm happy that our officers can have it, and we deploy it at a level. When you look at Blood Tribe, or you look at our CMP members that are out covering vast territory with help a far, far ways away from them, it's great to know that those guys have their tasers. They have other weapons of being able to protect themselves, too. It's just paramount, though, that Chief Byers and myself have to ensure, through our use of force sergeants like Kyle and our fellow Jason Walker, that our guys receive proper training, very clear direction on when to use it, how to use it, and are held accountable if they misuse it.
And Sam Hunter Page, I'd like to thank Bob Young for his presentation and for the representatives of our law enforcement agencies that are coming along. I think it's very significant that the law enforcement agencies are here in force for only 25% of our total audience tonight, which I think probably shows the concern about this controversial issue. I have a question for the Lethbridge Regional Police and for the police on how your policies differ in terms of the use of tasers, the deployment of tasers from the RCMP, and whether the Lethbridge Regional Police rules of engagement are exactly the same as those of the Blood Police, and if there are differences,
why? A fellow that might be able to answer the question as to Blood Tribe and Lethbridge would be Bill, who's been working a great deal with Blood Tribe policy. My belief is they're very similar. We're subtly different from RCMP in the way that they are deployed to members, and then again we run into a bit of conflict because the RCMP are a national service and they have different rules of engagement at different points. And it's going to look somewhat different each place that they go. And I am honestly not familiar enough with that to comment. Kyle might be, or Bill might know what the difference are, because they're the guys that are implementing that policy all the time. My focus is directly on what we do, that we meet the standards set up by the province, and I don't necessarily worry about the RCMP or how anybody else is doing it.
But you did say you would tweak the policies set up by the province.
We can, tweak might not be a proper word but because of the connotations come with it, but we're allowed a little lateral movement around it. So, in fact, they say that you have to qualify biannually. We tweaked it. Our guys qualify every year. So they have to be recertified and qualify with that instrument every year. Things like that. The type of instrument that you use is, I'm not sure if they limit us to the taser or if they have a couple called, you know, or Bill.
Perhaps then you could bring out
specific instrument.
So far as the rules of engagement are concerned, between the
Lethbridge
Regional Police and the
Lethbridge. Okay. I'll let Bill and Kyle answer that. They're the guys that do the policy. I simply indicated earlier what ours were. So there has to be a need to get immediate control, has to be prevent assault of grievous bodily harm, and the officer has to feel that there's a threat there and that no other levels of use of force can be used appropriately. might want to comment on.
I think I can answer that very quickly.
You got it from the mind, so that everybody can hear.
Okay. Sorry.
Just to clarify for myself, I'm a member of the Lethbridge Regional Police Service, and I want us to comment to the Blood Tribe Police Service for the next 3 years. Within the Lethbridge Police Service, one of my responsibilities was writing some of the policies and procedures that the service has today and making sure that we comply with CLIA accreditation standards as well as the provincial accreditation standards within the province. I've also written policies and procedures for the Blood Tribe Police Service surrounding the use of force. Within the province of Alberta, we do have the provincial policing standards, which each police service must adhere to. So you will see each police service meet those standards or exceed those standards within the province. There's no room not to meet those standards. In respect to the policies and procedures, I would say that they are very similar. Where they differ is not in the operational end of things, such as the deployment of the taser, but they would deal with the administrative issues, such as how many tasers are issued within the agency. When are the tasers monitored, such as when are they downloaded? One agency may do it every month, one may do it every 2 or 3 months, those sort of things. And so the operational things are kind of mandated by the province through the standards. The Solicitor General of the province has also issued to all police services a guidelines for the use of the taser, or the conducted energy device, sorry. So I would say, having looked at both agencies, and written policies and procedures for both, we've taken the best of what we can find, best practices from other agencies, from within our own agency, and I would say that we have a pretty standardized policy across the board.
Thanks, but from the statistics that you and the regional, Lethbridge Regional Police and the Blood Tribe Police gave out just now in terms of the deployments, it would seem that it's being used much more often by the Blood Tribe Police because of the numbers of people, the capital use in the of the civilian population covered by the Lethbridge Regional Police is vastly in excess of those covered by the Blood Tribe Police. Is that correct?
I would suggest that would be correct, and I would answer that by the operational factors that accompany policing in a rural setting compared to a municipal setting such as Lethbridge. Within the Blood Tribe Police Service, they're covering a very vast territory where often police officers are working alone at night and do not have access to backup. If you're looking at an incident on the Blood Tribe Reserve, if there's an incident up in the north end and the remainder of the officers are in Moses Lake, you have an officer that does not have backup for approximately 45 minutes. So there are different factors that would come with that deployment. And again, deployment, even though there are guidelines, it's a perception based on the officer. If he feels his life to be in danger, or, you know, someone else to, or that the suspect is going to escalate, he may deploy that taser, he or she may deploy that taser for their own protection, the protection of someone else that's around them, being a citizen, or even for the protection of the suspect so that they don't have to resort to deadly force. The taser just provides that opportunity for officers to not have to rely on hand-to-hand combat and not in getting close with the subject, whether that person be armed, or in the case of a female police officer or another male police officer who are not large in stature, if you're dealing with somebody that's 6'4" and 300 pounds and you're 5'2", 115 pounds, there's a big factor there. If that person gets a hold of you, you're in trouble.
Those factors apply equally to the Lethbridge regional area and the Blood Tribe, right? The reserve. I mean, I don't want to belabor the point, but the statistics to me are strikingly different in as much that obviously the taser is used much more often on the Blood Reserve than it is outside of the Blood Reserve.
Well, I don't know if it's correct just to focus on the statistics alone. I think you have to examine each incident on its own merit. By looking
at analysis done?
Yes, it is. Each incident is looked at on its own merit.
Is that public?
I'm sorry, sir?
Is that accessible to the public?
No, it's not, but if someone asks the questions, it would be, we're happy to share that with you.
So then, I think it's true that the use of tasers is much more prevalent on the Blood Reserve. Why is that?
Those are some of the questions that I can't ask, and I see the chief getting up, so I'll defer to him. So I'll try my best to answer that. In 2007, I believe the sergeant said we had 16 deployments.
Is that correct? We also had occasion to place in custody, in fact, not even in custody, the number would be larger. We had over 4,000 people incarcerated in Blood Tribe police cells last year. That's a very staggering number considering the population. In that matter, 16 uses, we'll say over 4,000, because everybody's arrested is not necessarily placed into cells. So we may well have had in excess of 5,000 arrested, but 4,000 held in custody in our cells. 16 taser uses, in my opinion, is not excessive. It's. I think another thing we have to keep in context is of those 4,000 people who are incarcerated in Blood Tribe police cells, a lot of those do not involve criminality. They involve social dysfunction. So, again, we're dealing with sometimes some unhealthy people who are not criminals. And I just hope that those numbers did put it in perspective for you.
No, I think that the points that you made are very valid, and one has to look at the reasons why there is a higher incidence. It's not just the statistics, so I thank you for your explanation.
Thank you.
And then talking to justifiers is an issue, you know, when you're not in the hospital setting. I'm just trying to get at a question here. The question is, you know, is this actually the case? Are a lot of people with mental illnesses being tasered? And if so, what can we do about that if it's the case? You know, because that seems to me kind of a worry.
Certainly, we work with Canadian Mental Health and Alberta Mental Health, and we participate in a mental health diversion program to keep people suffering from illnesses out of court. We think that's a very important recognition. People from the Schizophrenic Society come in and address our issues. Police officers' talents and abilities range from many, many different things, from mental health worker to social worker to a lawyer to a psychologist to a mediator. In the course of a day, we do many, many things, and we try to give all of our guys enough training that they can recognize issues. And unfortunately, sometimes the taser might be the most effective way to deal with a suicidal person. It's one horrific thing to think that you could call for help in a suicide situation and the police might actually arrive and kill the individual that was attempting to take their life. It does happen. There's actually a term for it. It's called suicide by cop. Individuals will actually challenge police officers to kill them because of their disorders. We're aware of those sorts of things. So it's another tool that we have in the belt. My review of these situations, it's mental instability caused by drugs and by alcohol, not by condition. You know, we have excellent treatment programs. Do we do enough? That's a whole other argument debate. I think we can do a lot more people for those folks in our community that do suffer those challenges in life. But in most situations, no, there's always a care worker. There's an external brain for a lot of these folks. The families are very good. They're left to deal with them, so they keep an eye on them. They ensure that their medication is there for them. In those situations when they're acting out, they very quickly recognize that, and they'll call us for assistance to take that individual to the hospital. So in those situations, we're very, very clear on it, and the amount of use of force is we will talk for hours versus trying to use any use of force against a person with a mental illness. Most of the incidents that we're involved in, that is induced by drugs or alcohol. And, you know, I think that's Bob's point. A lot of the people that we deal with and we interact with are not normal. And it's, you know, when I talked with one of the head justices here in Lethbridge when we started down the road of Alberta Mental Health Diversion, he says, well, I think quite frankly, everybody, if it's in court, has a bit of a mental health issue, whether it's addictions, whether it's control, whether it's whatever. He said, obviously, but define it for me. And it's about recognizing those levels and when it's appropriate, and so it does come. And, you know, we have the advantage here in Lethbridge is I can summons probably at any one given time 8 or 9 officers to one point within 10, 15 minutes. So that's the advantage we in municipal policing have. We police under lights, not in darkness. And, you know, all you have to do is take a drive out anywhere from the city 15 miles, stop your car on the side of a roadway, and recognize you're pretty much on your own. And it's a very, very scary feeling, I would imagine, for those police officers that are stuck there. The darkest it's ever been for me is a back alley that's 100 yards from a street light or somebody's backyard light. And so now those are the significant differences in communities.
Okay, I have a question, if you don't, for anyone, maybe Don, in fact, the question in this topic was, are stun guns really non-lethal? And so I'd like to hear your opinion on that. Do you consider them non-lethal? And if so, why? You know, in other words, why do you hold the belief you have about the lethality, if that's a word over? And perhaps you could start, and then maybe the other officers would want to say something about that.
Yeah, my answer is probably a bit of a weasel answer, in that I don't think that we actually even characterize it that way. Our concern is often with death following the use of the taser. So as I pointed out earlier, it's very seldom that any of the evidence suggests that the taser itself caused the death. There's usually a combination of factors. And so it's our concern is how much time or what are the other factors they're taking into consideration with deployment of the taser. Did I tell you about the situation in New York, the story in New York? Okay, I did that one, yeah. So they didn't accommodate, they didn't account for the fact that using the taser was going to result in a fall, and that those four officers actually that were involved in that have, I think, now been charged. I think the follow-up story I saw was they've been charged or disciplined in some way for not having taken into consideration the fact that a fall would likely result in grievous injury or death to the individual. So we don't have a position per se on the lethality of the taser, but in combination with other factors and with different restraint modes, there have been a number of deaths, and so we're extremely concerned about that.
Okay. Just coming back then, sure. So what you're saying is you're not sure.
We don't think it's something that we need to, that Amnesty has to make a decision about. The fact is that there have been a number of deaths following use of tasers in Canada. It's up to about 20, 21 individuals. In the U.S., it's over 300 now that have died following use of the taser. But you look at all those cases, in most cases, there's either the person is high on cocaine or other drugs, so there's already a problem in their system, and then they're tasered, and then they're held down. And it's a combination of those things that results in the death. In a lot of those cases.
Okay, so then can you explain why it is you would favor, or Amnesty would favor, maybe you differ from Amnesty?
No, I can't.
a moratorium on the use of tasers, because I would assume that that would be unnecessary, actually, from what you're suggesting.
Well, the moratorium is meant to be a temporary halt on the use of tasers, deployment of tasers in Canada, until we know exactly what combination of factors leads to death. The factors which does make it lethal. So we want to say, we want to have a much better sense in terms of the medical, physiological, and other factors that go into the possibility or the likelihood of death following the use of taser. We already know, in fact, research has already shown that multiple deployments, consecutive deployments of taser, is a risk factor. So we know some things about the impact of the taser already. So we, as other reports have also indicated, have called for not be multiple tasering of individuals. We've also, other reports as well as Amnesty have called for the police not to taser pregnant women. I think there's something else that, and lots of concern about combination of where cases where a police officer has or a group has gone from one device to the next device to the next device. The combination of those factors, so pepper spray and tasering and a restraint hold, combinations of those things are often present in deaths following use of the taser. So those are the kinds of issues that we want fully clarified and researched independently so that the police have the guidelines they need to move forward. So it doesn't too weaselly. Right.
Okay. Joe, I would suggest to me that there might be just a name claim that you don't want to be sued by the taser company.
Did any of you want to say anything on that question?
And I'd like to add then the question on moratorium. Would you object to a moratorium on the use of tasers, and if so, why?
I'll give a very direct answer, and I guess I consider them less than lethal. I'm not a medical expert. I can't tell you whether they actually cause death or not. I have to go on the reports that we've received. I have to listen to what medical examiners, in particular as in Alberta, has said, where he does not attribute death to taser. And I would be opposed to the moratorium in that I feel that we do have proper accountability and chains of it, and that it is a device that is deployed with our officers to keep them safe and to keep our communities safe. And by all means, there has to be continued research, there has to be continued understanding of those issues, but at this time I would hate to take a tool away from our officers that I think keeps them safe and our community safe. And I just have to, again, enforce that we have accountability rules. Those guys are expected to use them in appropriate times. And right now the MX26, one of the things about it, not only does it give us an exact computer printout of the length of time, that the device itself shuts off after 5 seconds. So it has to be a physical effort by the officer to multiple stun, and multiple stuns do not have their place in most situations. There may be some where that individual is combative, he may have access to a weapon, may be able to continue on, and so our officer has to ensure that they render this individual so they have control. I guess they have to gain control would be the better way of putting that. Gain control of the individual so that the people he was assaulting or attacking or the officer himself are safe. And so that's why I would not support it. I think it's a very effective tool. It is being studied, and we should continue to study it as we do with everything.
It was good to hear that the Bud Chief have a system where they download the tasers each time. I'm wondering, Chief McKenzie, in a larger force, such as yours, is that possible?
Yes, each one of them has that built into it, and you can download it. When our officers attend at lineup, so they all get together at the beginning of shift, and they're issued their weapons, whether they be shotguns, whether they be the conducted energy device. The sergeant on duty that's issuing equipment records it. He knows who has which taser, who has which everything. The officers are then expected to put that use of force report in, and then at which time the use of force safety officers will download that taser. They're the only guys that have the capability to do that. That's like anything. I'm sure that policemen who are pretty good at getting through things and finding things and finding fact could probably figure out how to take this thing apart and download it, but that would again be recognizable. And so that security is in there. They will download that. They will give us that report each time there's a taser use. And then the use of force committee is responsible for checking those tasers and ensuring that we have all the download information. Blood Tribe have elevated that and are doing a very good job. Each officer has his own personalized taser, and so he's responsible for it. And they'd better have good control of it, and they'd better understand it. So it's a great system, and it may be something that we'll have to start to look at.
Just have a question for anybody there. There's some kind of revolving tasers.
Well, connected in terms of there were deaths following the use of a taser. So in descriptions of most of the events, something else was going on as well, either an elevated drug in the bloodstream, pre-existing heart conditions, death as a result of falls, death as a result of combination being in an elevated status from drug use, being tasered, and then being restrained in a way that compromised the respiratory ability or capacity of the subject. So a different story to each of them, but there's often it's about a clump of factors. It's not just, as I said before, that's why it's not about the taser being lethal, but it's about the circumstances under which it's being used and the additional, the restraint methods that are sometimes used in combination with the taser that it seems to result in death. And that's why the coroners don't attribute the cause of death to taser. And this is, and when they do, as they have occasionally in the U.S., taser will take issue with that and has sued coroners and medical examiners who have in turn changed their findings based on the threat or the actual lawsuits. So that's a bit of an issue with the Taser International is very aggressive in protecting their product. When various reports were starting to come out about Taser use and there being problems, their share value dropped. So they mounted a very aggressive campaign to make sure that they, anytime someone was attributing a death to Taser, that they would seek intervention status in hearings or inquiries, or they've got, at any given time, they've got a number of lawsuits they lost one, though. And it's a $1.7 million decision against Taser for the involvement of the Taser in that person's death. I don't have the details, but actually I do have the newspaper article here, but I won't get out right now. But the head of Taser International said, well, we'll lose one once in a while, but as long as we win most of them, that will keep our market share up.
I don't know if there's a full enough report, Don. You might have heard on the young man in Winnipeg. I don't know if they've actually come up with the cause of death there, or if that's been released, but it certainly is under review. I don't know if anybody's... Yeah, there'll be an inquiry. Anytime that somebody has a death, like that, there's a fatal inquiry.
So I think we get to have the other response. Thanks so much for your questions, and of course for you coming all this way anyway. It's been terrific. And Tom again, and thanks, and of course Don here from the coast. Small crowd, but I think we've been well informed, you know, about what's going on here. So thanks again. Thank you all. Bye-bye.
And of course, as many of you know, there's a very active group here in Amnesty International Group in Lethbridge, and they have an event for the Sisters in Spirit Vigil on October 4th, that's Saturday at 7 o'clock, at Gulf Gardens. And I'm sure all of you know where that is. I have no idea, but I'm sure you all do. So please, if you're able to, join the group in that vigil. It's about the missing and murdered women, Aboriginal women across Canada. So I invite you to join the group at that event. And it looks like someone's holding up a bin for donations. So I'll...
Okay, well, they get Scotsmen to do this. So if you have any shekels, guys, we are a volunteer. We don't take money from anyone, really, basically. Not a charitable organization yet. So we would be grateful for anything. And there is a noise bylaw here, but good stone paper is better than... But anyway, thanks again very much for everyone for coming out tonight and your questions.
Thank you.